Give you greetings in Jesus' name. I would invite you to turn to the revelation of Jesus Christ. Today we're going to be looking at chapters 12, 13, and 14, which constitute another vision. And in this vision, we can see seven signs or wonders that John saw. Just by way of advertisement, I came across the book recently. Actually, it was recommended to me by my friend James Lowry. And it was published by Christian Aid Ministries, their publishing branch. And it's by Ted Byler, who I believe is a son of John Dan Byler. Some of you older people may have remembered or at least heard of John Dan Byler. He was a Bible teacher. I think he's since passed on. Elam probably knows who I'm talking about. And so maybe, I don't know, Marvin, he does a nice job. Now, I don't agree with everything he says, but it's very readable. It's not complicated reading. And so, you know, if you want to borrow it from me, you know, I'd be glad to loan it to you, but you can also get a copy from, it's called The Mystery of Christ in the Revelation. Okay, The Mystery of Christ in the Revelation. All right. Well, today we're going to be looking at the warfare between the man-child and the dragon in chapters 12, 13, and 14. And there are seven signs or wonders that John sees that are revealed to him. In chapter 12, verse 1, there's the sign of the woman with child. In verse 3, the fiery red dragon. And then in 13:1, the beast rising out of the sea with seven heads and ten horns. And in 13:3, the beast's wounded head. And then in 13:11, the beast coming out of the earth with two horns. It's another beast, a different beast. And then in 14:1, we see the Lamb standing on Mount Zion with 144,000. And finally, in verse 6, we see the three angels pronouncing judgment, the wrath of God, on those who are disobedient. Okay, those are the seven signs, and keep those in mind as we go through and look at this passage again. Okay, again, I'll remind you, in case you've missed my point, which I think I have made a number of different times, is that what we are seeing here are parallel visions that are running alongside each other. And I think this particular set of visions is very strongly indicative of that because of how it begins. All right? It can't be something in the future because of what it refers to at the very beginning. Let's read these chapters again. Remember what John says, that blessed are those who read. And so let's read. Now a great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a garland of 12 stars. Then, being with child, she cried out in labor and in pain to give birth. And another sign appeared in heaven. Behold, a great fiery red dragon, having seven heads and 10 horns and 7 diadems on his head. His tail drew a third of the stars of heaven and threw them to the earth, and the dragon stood before the woman who was ready to give birth, to devour her child as soon as it was born. She bore a male child who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron, and her child was caught up to God and his throne. Then the woman fled into the wilderness, where she has a place prepared by God, that they should feed her there 1,260 days. The war and war broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels fought with the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought, but they did not prevail. nor was a place found for them in heaven any longer. So the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old, called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole earth. It was cast to the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. Then I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ have come. For the accuser of our brethren, who accuses them before our God, day and night has been cast down. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, and they did not love their lives to the death. Therefore rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea, for the devil has come down to you, having great wrath, because he knows that he has a short time. Now when the dragon saw that he had been cast to the earth, he persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male child. But the woman was given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness to her place, where she is nourished for a time, and times, and half a time, from the presence of the serpent. So the serpent spewed water out of his mouth like a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away by the flood. But the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed up the flood, which the dragon had spewed out of his mouth. And the dragon was enraged with the woman, and he went to make war with the rest of her offspring, who keep the commandments of God and had the testimony of Jesus Christ. Then I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and on his horns ten crowns, and on his head a blasphemous name. Now the beast which I saw was like a leopard. His feet were like the feet of a bear, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion. The dragon gave him his power, his throne, and great authority. And I saw one of his heads as if it had been mortally wounded, and his deadly wound was healed. And the world marveled and followed the beast, so they worshiped the dragon, who gave authority to the beast. And they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him? And he was given a mouth, speaking great things and blasphemies. And he was given authority to continue for 42 months. Then he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven. It was granted to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And authority was given him over every tribe, tongue, and nation. All who dwell on the earth will worship him, whose names have not been written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. If anyone has an ear, let him hear. He who leads into captivity shall go into captivity. He who kills with the sword must be killed with the sword. Here is the patience and the faith of the saints. Then I saw another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb and spoke like a dragon. And he exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence and causes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. He performs great signs, so that he even makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. And he deceives those who dwell on the earth by those signs which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image of the beast who was wounded by the sword and lived. He was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. He causes all, both great and small, small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their foreheads, and no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is a number of a man, his number, 666. Then I looked, and behold, a lamb standing on Mount Zion, and with him 140,000 having his father's name written on their foreheads. And I heard a voice from heaven, like the voice of many waters, and like the voice of loud thunder, And I heard the sound of harpists playing their harps. They sang as if it were a new song before the throne, before the four living creatures and the elders. And no one could learn the song except the 144,000 who were redeemed from the earth. These are the ones who were not defiled with women, for they are virgins. They are the ones who follow the Lamb wherever he goes. These were redeemed from among men, being firstfruits to God and to the Lamb. And in their mouth was found no deceit, for they are without fault before the throne of God. Then I saw another angel flying in the midst of heaven, having the everlasting gospel to preach to those who dwell on the earth, to every nation, tribe, tongue, and people, saying with a loud voice, "Fear God and give glory to him, for the hour of his judgment has come, and worship him who made heaven and earth and the sea and springs of water." And another angel followed, saying, "Babylon is fallen, that great city, because she has made all nations drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication." But then a third angel followed them, saying with a loud voice, "If anyone worships the beast in his image and receives his mark on his forehead or on his hand, he himself shall also drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is poured out full strength into the cup of his indignation. He shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb. And the smoke of their torment ascends forever and ever. And they have no rest day or night, who worship the beast and his image, and whoever receives the mark of his name." Here is the patience of the saints. Here are those who keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus. Then I heard a voice from heaven saying to me, "Write, blessed are the dead who die in the Lord from now on." "Yes," says the Spirit, "that they may rest from their labors and their works follow them." Then I looked, and behold, a white cloud, and on the cloud sat one like the Son of Man, having on his head a golden crown, and in his hand a sharp sickle. And another angel came out of the temple, crying with a loud voice to him who sat on the cloud, "Thrust in your sickle and reap, for the time has come for you to reap, for the harvest of the earth is ripe." So he who sat on the cloud thrust in his sickle on the earth, and the earth was reaped. Then another angel came out of the temple, which is in heaven, he also having a sharp sickle. And another angel came out from the altar, who has had power over fire. And he cried with a loud cry to him who had the sharp sickle, and saying, "Thrust in your sharp sickle, and gather the clusters of the vine of the earth, for her grapes are fully ripe." So the angel thrust into the earth and gathered the vine of the earth and threw it into the great winepress of the wrath of God. And the winepress was trampled outside the city, and blood came out of the winepress up to the horses' bridles for 1,600 furlongs. There's some rather amazing imagery in these verses. But if you don't walk away with anything else from what I say this morning or what I'm going to be talking about this morning, I want you to understand one thing. There's a warfare going on between the forces of God and the forces of Satan. God's going to win, and it's up to us to decide whether we're going to be on the winning side or not. Okay? That's not hard to figure out. Okay? And I want you to note that on two occasions in this passage, it talks about those who keep the commandments of God and had the testimony of Jesus Christ. Okay? Those are the ones who are going to be on the winning side. So again, if you don't get the rest of the imagery, if it seems kind of strange and odd to you or amazing and beyond your comprehension, walk away from that. Those who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ, those are going to be the ones who are going to be on the winning side. Now, let's look at the first section here in chapter 12, in which the dragon tries to destroy the man-child. There are some things in Revelation in which we're very clearly told what the image is, the metaphors are being used, what the pictures that we see are all about. And in this particular section, we are told very clearly who this dragon is. It's Satan. It's the enemy. Okay, so we can start off with that as a given. The dragon is the enemy. It's Satan. It's the prince of the demons, Beelzebub. Remember we talked about Apollyon earlier and so on. These are all names for Satan. The serpent of old, who's called the devil and Satan. And of course, Satan is a name or a description of the enemy, or as Jesus refers to him as the evil one, okay, which has behind it the idea of accusing. And you remember in Job that Satan went into the courtyards of heaven before God and he accused Job. And we have this contest that Job knows nothing about between God and between Satan, and Job is sort of the battleground. And the whole point of the contest is, will a man serve God, whether it benefits him in this life or not, or whether it's easy or not? And of course, in the end, Job proves to the false accuser that yes, indeed, a man can do so. But Satan is always the accuser. He brings an accusation against us. And he is a liar. And his accusations are often lies. All right? Now, but let's look here. We see at the beginning a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a garland of 12 stars, and she had a child. Who's this woman? Well, there's all kinds of explanations as to who this woman is. Some people say that this is the Virgin Mary. And the child that she's having is obviously Jesus. Well, I think the child that is being referred to here is obviously Christ, is obviously Jesus. Because it talks about in verse 5 that she bore a male child who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron. And her child was caught up to God and his throne. And we know that Jesus sits at the right hand of the Father in his majesty. I think this is definitely, when we talk about the male child, this is definitely a reference to our Lord. But I don't necessarily think that this is a reference to Mary in particular. I think, as if you remember, as you go through the Old Testament, and then if you go through the New Testament, there are... Two entities that are referred to as being either the wife of God or the bride of Christ. Who is referred to as the wife of God in the Old Testament? God's people, Israel. Who is referred to as the bride of Christ? It's the church. What do the children of Israel and the bride of Christ have in common? Both of them, in their time, are the people of God. Both of them are the people of God. They are the people who belong to God, who are called after his name. And he has a special relationship with them that is akin to a husband to a wife. All right, and so I think, now again, there's discussion about this. Is this referring to the Old Testament saints? Is this referring to the New Testament saints? Is it referring to both? And you could talk about that and so on and argue those kinds of things, and maybe they all would work. I would just like to suggest to you that this is referring to the people of God, okay? And I think it must be, in a sense, referring to both the people of God in the Old Covenant and the people of God in the New Covenant because of some other things that are being said here. But we do know that Jesus came out of Israel. He was born out of the children of Israel. His mother, his stepfather, and all his biological ancestors before him, with a few exceptions of some people like Rahab and so on, who were kind of brought in, and Ruth and so on, they were all part of the of Israel. Okay? So I think here we have an image of God. We see an image here of God's plan of bringing Christ into the world in the context of the Jewish people who was his spouse, And at the same time, and she gives him birth, and he comes to this earth, and at the same time, Satan, the dragon, who is described as fiery, with seven heads and ten horns. And remember that seven is often a number that is used in the scriptures, and particularly in Revelation, to refer to completeness. Ten and its multiples, like 1,000 and 10,000 times 10,000, are often used to refer to sort of a multitude, sometimes an uncountable multitude. But it's more than just a few, okay? It's more than just a few. And the idea here, I think, is of this is wickedness in its full completeness, in its multitudeness. Okay? That's what Satan is, in his full wickedness and his multitudeness. Satan is really bad, in case you wonder. And I don't mean bad in the way that you hear some boys use it when they actually mean, hey, that's cool or that's great. That's really bad. No, he's bad. Like bad has always been used, which means not good. The opposite of good. All right? You'll notice that his tail drew a third of the stars of heaven and threw them to the earth, and the dragon stood before the woman who was ready to give birth. And we know all the machinations that were in place to do our Lord in, even at the time of his birth, with Herod and so on. But nonetheless, God provided a way of rescue and protection. But she bore this child, who was to rule all the nations with a rod of iron. And that word rule is an interesting word, because elsewhere, whereas in the New Testament, it's translated as shepherd. He shall shepherd them with a rod of iron. Now, the idea of ruling with a rod of iron, we can sometimes think of it as, you know, really bang. And there is an image there where it says, he shall smash them, in Isaiah, in one of the prophecies, he shall smash them like a potter's vessel with this rod of iron. You get this feeling that there's going to be judgment and destruction, and there's something ferocious and fierce and scary about God. And indeed there is. It is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. But here, if this idea of rule has within it the idea of shepherding, of guiding, he shall rule the nations with a rod of iron. And her child was cut up to God and his throne. And I think, again, here we see the risen and ascended Lord ruling at the right hand of God the Father Almighty in majesty. We've seen a picture of this already in the book of Revelation, where Jesus is there in heaven with his Father. But notice where war broke out. There's a battle between the forces of God and the forces of Satan. It says Michael, which we are told is an archangel, one of God's angelic, generals in a sense. And it says Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon and his angels. And here we are told that Satan, when he was cast out of heaven, he took with him a third of the heavenly hosts, of the stars of the heaven, which oftentimes is an image used to describe angels. So we see this battle going on between the forces of righteousness and the forces of evil. It's a spiritual battle. It's a battle that takes place between real things that exist, things that maybe we cannot see with our physical eyes, but that does not mean that they do not exist. In fact, I would like to suggest to them, though I don't want to be misconstrued as being too Platonic here, that these are real, real beings. They exist in perhaps more than some other things that we think of as being real exist. War broke out. And it says that the great dragon was cast out, the serpent of old, who deceives the whole world, and he was cast into death, onto the earth. There's a place in the Gospels, in the Gospel of Luke chapter 10, where Jesus has sent out his disciples, and he's given them power to cast out demons. He's given them power to perform miracles, to heal people, and so on. And they come back from that experience, and they're all excited. And they report to Jesus how successful they did. Yes, we cast out demons in your name. We healed people in your name. And they're really thrilled. And Jesus says, I saw Satan fall from heaven to earth. I saw the forces of the evil one defeated in your ministry. When you cast out those demons, Satan was defeated. But then he goes on and says, but don't rejoice in that you've been able to cast out these demons and so on. But rejoice that your name is written in the book of life. And Revelation picks up on that idea here of those whose names are written in the book of life. That's our real reason for rejoicing. Whatever we may do or be able to do because of what God gives us, the power that he gives us, okay, that's just icing on the cake. That's just something to help us to do some of the things that God wants us to get accomplished here in this life. But the thing that we need to focus on, the thing that is the real ground of our rejoicing is our names are written in the book of life. All right, so we see this picture of the forces of evil, Satan's forces, being defeated by the forces of righteousness, by Michael and his archangels. They are defeated. They are cast out of heaven. Their power is reduced. But then we see they're cast to the earth. And I think this is an image of the fact that Satan knows. And it says here, okay, it says here, for the devil has come down to you, down to the earth, having great wrath. He's been defeated. He is mad. He is angry. He is spitting mad because he's been beat. And he is bound and determined, even though he has been beaten, to take as many along with him as he possibly can. Because he knows he has a short time. He has a short time to accomplish this. It says that when the dragon saw that he had been cast to earth, he persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male child. He began to persecute God's people here on earth. And I think by this time, we're talking about the church. We're talking about those from every tribe, tongue, kindred, and nation who responded to the gospel, whose name is written in the book of life. But the woman was given two wings of a great eagle that she may fly into the wilderness to her place where she is nourished for times and times and half a time. Now, I don't know exactly what this means. I'll be just quite frank with you. I don't really know what it means. But I think that if we look back across the course of history, this is a supposition on my part. This is sort of a guess. If we look back across the course of history, we know that there was a time when the gospel was very curtailed, when it did not look as though there was too much of genuine, real Christianity going on. And I think that may have been the time when the woman was in the wilderness, when the church was in the wilderness. But there was always the church. God always had a people. They may have been underground. They may have been in somewhat secret. They may have had to keep their heads down. We know that throughout church history, if you read the Martyr's Mirror, there are references to little groups like the Paulicans, the Armillists, the Waldensians, and so on throughout church history, who oftentimes lived out the teachings of the gospel, who followed, who kept the commands of God and had the testimony of Jesus Christ. Okay. But the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed the flood, and the dragon tried to destroy it, but even the earth protected them. And it says that the dragon was enraged with the woman, and he went to make war with the rest of her offspring, who keep the commands of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. The devil, the dragon, Satan, he's enraged. He's angry with the woman. He is angry with the bride of Christ. And his intent and purpose is the only thing he will ever be able to accomplish, or even has a whisker of a hope of accomplishing, because he knows his time is short, and in the end, he will be defeated. The only thing that he can do is to take as many people with him as he can, and to take even those who have at some point or another professed his name. Okay, then we move into chapter 13, where we have two beasts who come to the picture. In chapter 13, 1 to 10, we have the beast, the first beast, who I believe is the Antichrist. Okay? And one of the things that's interesting here, as you go through this section here, we have the dragon, Satan. We have the beast, who's the Antichrist. And then we have the second beast, who in Revelation chapter 19, verse 20, is, I think, the same as it says there about the beast and the false prophet. And I think that probably the second beast here is a false prophet. And, you know, we talked this morning about what is a prophet. Well, at the very basic level, a prophet is a person who speaks words, who speaks forth. Okay? And a prophet of God is a person who speaks forth the words of God. A false prophet is someone who does not speak the words of God, but who speaks actually the works of his father and the devil. And we see here an unholy trinity, dragon, the Satan, taking the place of the Father. How many of you have ever read C.S. Lewis's The Screwtape Letters? He refers to Satan as our Father below. If you know anything about that, this is a dialogue or a conversation between a senior devil and a junior devil, in which the senior devil is instructing the junior devil as to how to tempt this one Christian who he has been given as part of his job to apostatize. The senior devil refers to our father below, Satan. Okay. Here we have the Antichrist, the beast. And we also have the second beast, this false prophet. Later on, you'll see here as we go along that this false prophet breathes into the image of the beast, and the beast comes to life. It gives it the breath of life. And I think that that is an indication that this is, the, in a sense, the anti-Holy Spirit, the opposite of the Holy Spirit. So there's an unholy trinity here at work that is in direct opposition, is a parallel to the Holy Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, and is working directly against them. All right. He said, I stood in the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, has seven heads and ten horns. On his horns, 10 crowns on his head, a blasphemous name. Okay, horns, often throughout the Bible, are used symbolically for strength and for power. Okay, the imagery is the imagery of a ox or a bull with these great big long horns, and this is a powerful thing, and sort of the points of its power are those horns. That was the idea behind the whole thing. It was an ancient symbol of strength and power, and it was used that way. Talked about that, you know, it talks in the Old Testament about the horns of the altar. There were actually these projections kind of sticking up from the corners of the altar, representing the power of God. All right, seven heads, again, 10 horns, 7 completeness, 10 in its multitudeness. This is a very, very powerful, evil, wicked person. It's the Antichrist. It says he was like a leopard. His feet were like the feet of a bear. His mouth like the mouth of the lion. And if you remember in the book of Daniel, that Daniel sees the images of these various beasts, and here we almost see all those images, all those animals who represented kingdoms and principalities and powers and so on, being brought together in this one beast. That's the image we have there. Okay? Be very interesting, and if you are really into, if you're really into like Reformation stuff, and you look at old engravings of artists who try to depict these to illustrate the various Bibles that were printed at that particular time in the vernacular, it's some really interesting artwork. Okay, in fact, there's an Anabaptist tract called The Uncovering of the Babylonian Harlot, which was written by Pilgrim Marpeck. And on the second printing of that, there's an engraving that depicts this thing, depicts this creature. It's really kind of an amazing creature. So it is. If you want to read that, okay, we have lots of copies around because Peter Hoover translated for us in Benchmark Press a number of years ago, printed it, and we still have a bunch of copies around. It's well worth reading. I'll talk about that here in a bit, bring something in from that particular track. Okay? Visually, these kinds of images are really astounding. They're exotic, to say the least. Okay? And I think it points to the fact that they're trying to make a point. They're trying to help us to see something in a sort of visual way. And we have to understand what some of this imagery means. Can't nail it all down. I don't think anybody can really do that. But it does tell us some things. But I think that it's very clear here that what John has seen and what's being revealed to him is the Antichrist. Okay? The one who is against Christ. John, 1 John chapter 2, verse 18, it says this. And this is John writing back almost 2,000 years ago. Not quite maybe, but almost 2,000 years ago. And he says this is the Apostle John, the same person who this was revealed to. He says, "Little children, it is the last hour." Now, if John meant that literally and literally 60 minutes, which some people insist whenever you have times, that's how it has to be interpreted. This is the last hour. We are in an hour that has lasted for a long time in human reckoning, the way humans reckon things. But we are in this last hour. Okay, this is the last hour. And as you have heard that the Antichrist is coming, even now many Antichrists have come, by which we know that it is the last hour. They went out from us, but they were not of us. For if they had been of us, they would have continued with us, but they were out of that, that they might be made manifest that none of them were of us. Okay, so even at this particular point in time, John is saying that there are many There are many people running about, individuals running about, some of whom seem to probably have some connection initially with the church, with God's people, but now they're out. And he said, listen, if they were really true, okay, they would have stayed. But now we know what they're really about. Okay? And they are a prefigurement, they are a herald of the Antichrist, this being, this creature, this person, who is going, in a sense, to be an alternative to Christ. Okay? An Antichrist. Let's go on to chapter 4 of 1 John. And at the beginning of chapter 4, it says, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits. You know, today, people are really into spirituality. Do you read that in the newspapers even? You know, tapping into spirituality. They talk about, well, you know, I'm a spiritual person, but I'm not religious. Somehow or another, there's a sense that they want to connect with something beyond themselves. Well, I have news for you. There are many spirits out there. There are some really powerful spiritual forces that are not of Christ. And John is saying here in this particular case, test the spirits, whether they are of God. There are spirits that come from God, and there are spirits that come from Satan, the father of lies. Because many false prophets have gone out into the world. By this you know the Spirit of God. Every spirit that confesses that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is of God. And every spirit that does not confess that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is not of God. And this is the spirit of the Antichrist, which you heard from was coming and is now already in the world. The spirit of Antichrist is already in the world. Okay, that's what John says. And the spirit of Antichrist wages war against the confession. Jesus Christ has come in the flesh. It wages war against the confession that Jesus is Lord. Because the Antichrist wants people to say that Satan is Lord. The beast is Lord. The Antichrist is Lord. And the fact of the matter is, as we see here later on, every person is going to say one of two things. They are going to say that Jesus is Lord, or they are going to say that the Antichrist is Lord. And you don't get to opt out on this choice. Okay. Let's look at, it says the dragon gave his power, his throne, his great authority. And it says, I saw one of his heads as so mortally wounded. One of the things about Satan is that he is a deceiver, and he mocks and he imitates God, and he appears sometimes as an angel of light, and he can sometimes do things that appear to be miraculous. And here we see a situation in which one of the heads of the Antichrist is mortally wounded, but then it is healed. And people are marvel, and they wonder, and they think, this is great. There must be some great power and authority and so on behind this whole thing. And so they worship the dragon. They bow down and serve it. They worship the beast and say, who is like this beast? Who is able to make war with him? And the implication there is that this beast is the most powerful thing on earth. And there is no one like him. Who is able to defeat him? Well, the fact of the matter is, he's already been defeated. That's the reality. He's already been defeated. When Christ suffered on the cross and died, and God raised him from the dead, Satan's empire fell. He was defeated. And he was cast from heaven, from his position of power and authority. And he could no longer deceive the nations. The Holy Spirit went out throughout the earth, convicting every man. There is now a light that lightens every man, teaching them who God is. The grace of God has appeared unto all men, teaching them. And so there is one who is able to make war on the beast and on the Antichrist. It says he was made to speak great things and blasphemy and was given authority to continue for 42 months. Again, you can get literal about times here and insist that this has to be 42 months of a calendar, of a physical calendar year. I think it just simply is similar to the whole thing which says a short time. An hour. This is the last hour. When it talks later on about a number of days. What's it mean? It means that there is a termination point of the period of time in which the Antichrist seems to be in control. It's not going to last forever. It's actually, in the whole scope of things, a short time. It is the last hour. And the Antichrist knows, and Satan knows, that he has a short time. And he is doing everything he can do to sweep as many persons into his net as he possibly can. It says that he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven. It was granted to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And I think when it talks there about overcoming them, I think it means the power to bring them to physical death. I don't think it means the power to destroy them spiritually or overcome them that way. It says he was given authority over every tribe, tongue, and nation. On the earth will worship him, whose names, who will worship him? Who will not worship him? What's it say here? Whose name have not been written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. What did Jesus said we should rejoice in? Rejoice that your name is written in the book of life. In the Lamb's book of life. All right? Everyone will worship him except for those whose names have been written in the Lamb's book of life. If you feel God's voice speaking to you today, and you are not giving in to that call, I want you to understand something. You're either worshiping the Lamb, or you're worshiping the Antichrist. You don't get to make a choice here about opting out. It's one or the other. Either your name is written in the Lamb's book of life, or it's not written in the Lamb's book of life. Okay? And how do you know that? How do you know? Or I should say, how will any of us know that if your name is written there? Are you keeping the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ? And so John is saying to us here, if you have an ear, hear. He who leads into captivity shall go into captivity. And he who kills with the sword must be killed with the sword. Here is the patience and the faith of the saints. Jesus said, those who take up the sword will die by the sword. Satan wants to lead us into captivity, but God will lead him into his final captivity. Satan wants to slay us, but in the end he shall be slain. He shall be destroyed. But for us, patience and faith will see us through this time of tribulation, this time of trial, this time when it seems as though Satan is winning the battle because so many people are following in his train. Then he said, I saw another beast coming out of the heaven, above the earth. He had two horns like a lamb, and he spoke like a dragon. And this is such a strange kind of image, because elsewhere we have this image of the lamb who was slain before the foundation of the earth. And we know that that lamb is Jesus Christ. And here is a second beast who has the horns of a lamb, two lambs, but he speaks like a dragon, looks like a lamb, speaks like a dragon. Okay. Looks like a lamb, speaks like a dragon. Okay, and it says that he is exercising the authority of the first beast in his presence. and causes all the earth to worship and fall down before the beast. And he deceives those. And he deceives them by miraculous signs and wonders and displays of spiritual power that overawe and overwhelm and confuse people. I just want to say something here. If you're confused about things spiritually, that does not come from God. God is not the author of confusion. As Paul says, he does not speak with an uncertain trumpet, but he speaks a sure word of prophecy. And here, though, we have the Antichrist, here we have the second beast, the false prophet, who speaks forth the prophecy coming from the dragon. He's deceiving people. He's confusing people. He's deceptive. And it says that he was given power to give breath to the image of the beast, and the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. Those that he causes to be killed are those whose names is written in the Lamb books of life. He causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their foreheads. And that no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. And his number is 666, not 666. The Greek is 666. If it was 666, it would be sigma, sigma, sigma. But it's not. It's the word for 666. A while ago, my son Andrew came home from work, and he at that time worked with a gentleman who was, we might say, of the other school of prophetic interpretation than what I am. And he told Andrew, you know what the mark of the beast is. He says, it's the cell phone. You take this thing and, you know, you hold it in your hand and you put it against your forehead and you talk into it. It's obvious. It's the mark of the beast. Now, we got a chuckle out of that. Maybe more than chuckle. So we did about the whole thing. But you know what? He may not have been wrong. He may not have been wrong. Now, I don't think he was right for the reason he thought he was right. Okay? I don't think he was right for the reason he thought he was right. In fact, I don't think that there is any physical thing that is intrinsically a mark of the beast. I don't think so. Cell phones are not a mark of the beast. Let me read you a passage that Mark Byler wrote, which I thought basically covers the basis here when talking about the mark of the beast. He says, there has been too much hype and hysteria about the Antichrist. People are warned about accepting social security numbers, credit cards, computer chips, etc., because of this very passage. But these cannot be what Christ is warning his people about, for they are amoral things. Taking the mark of the beast and worshiping the image of the beast are moral choices that will send one to hell. It is inconsistent with scriptures to teach that accepting a physical, non-sinful, sinful, earthly number or mark will condemn one to eternal damnation. No, it is sin, and only sin, that has such authority over a man. Okay? I would like to suggest, however, it talks here about buying and selling, and I would like to suggest that and the reason why I said he may not have been entirely wrong is because it is really in the material things that we are, I think, most, that Satan uses most, are the desire for material things, the desire for wealth, the desire for earthly security, the desire to accumulate, the desire to have these gadgets, and our life won't be happy. Recently, I read in the Lancaster Intelligencer Journal, they interviewed several young people, and they said, what's the one thing you could not live without? Most of them said, My cell phone. My cell phone. Well, I want to tell you that when you get to the point in which the cell phone is the thing you cannot live without, it just might be the mark of the beast. It just might be. But it's not because there's anything intrinsically wrong with a cell phone or having one or using it. Okay? But it may become the mark of the beast for you. Okay? And I would like to suggest to us that the mark of the beast is wrapped up in this thing, I have to have it, and if I don't, I have to have these things. I have to be able to get them. I have to have them, or I won't be happy. My life won't be satisfactory. I won't be fulfilled. If somebody else has it and I don't have it, that's going to make me unhappy. Okay? To me, that sounds like the mark of the beast. That's not coming from Jesus. Because Jesus, I mean, I can honestly say I could throw away my cell phone tomorrow and not be unhappy. That might be inconvenient, but you believe me, I was inconvenient before I even had the thing. And I didn't even know it was inconvenient. Okay. It has to be what will make you happy. Was it that you can live with? That, I think, is indicative of what this might be. He says, here's wisdom. Let him who understand calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, 666. You know, all kinds of strange things happen with this number. They tell me, and I don't know exactly true, they tell me like on 644s, they don't have 666. I don't know if that's really true or not. It may have been true at one time. But, and I'm not exactly sure what this number means, right? If you look at this as how people have understood it historically, okay, they've understood it as, I mean, certain people have understood it historically. Mainly Protestants have understood it historically, and that included many Anabaptists, though they didn't understand it this way exclusively. And that is, it's the Pope. In fact, Ted Bother makes quite a long case for that, and I'm not sure if I buy it entirely, but you know, he makes a very strong case for that, and brings out the Latin name for the Vicar of Christ and everything like that, and adds up the various Roman numerals and comes out with 666. That's really nice. I remember a number of years ago, I had bought a book, and inside this book was an old bookmarker that somebody had, and it was a little piece of paper, and it was like something from about the 1930s or 40s, and somebody had done these calculations. It was like a little tract or something. Somebody had done these calculations and to show us that Mussolini and Hitler was the name. It was obvious that they were the beast. Okay? It's obvious. Well, one would have to admit that there were beast-like qualities to Mussolini and Hitler. Okay? So I'm not going to come down one way or another about that. And the reason why I wouldn't necessarily be so willing to just apply this to the Pope and to the Roman Catholic Church is because in our day today, and I think this is even true, even among some of those who are accusing the Pope of being the Antichrist and of being the beast, that I think the beast is the apostate religious systems that we have around us. I was reminded that this week of something I heard in a nearby community of a church where the pastor of that church was having an affair with a member of his church, and this became known. Well, he has resigned, but he won't be leaving till July, and in the meantime, He's continuing to preach, and people are still going to go to church. Some of them have left because of it, bless their hearts. But I would just tell you, wherever things like that happen, to me, that is indicative of the beast. That's the beast to me. Wherever there are communities that are claiming to be Christian, but they do not abide by the commandments of Jesus, and they tolerate gross sin, and they refuse, and even, and especially if they tolerate among their leaders, okay? To me, that sounds very, very close to the beast. Now, I need to go on. It gets better. Okay, it gets better. Because all of a sudden, it switches. The scene switches, and we go up to heaven. And we see the Lamb standing on Mount Zion. Now, some people see this as literal Mount Zion, that place in Palestine or Israel today that's just called Mount Zion, where the ancient Jewish temple was and so on. I don't think that's what it's talking about. I think it's talking about the Zion of God, Mount Zion, the heavenly city, the heavenly Jerusalem, standing on Mount Zion, and with him 144,000. Remember, we've come across this number before in chapter 7, where it talked about 144,000 whose names are sealed. You know, people worry about the mark of the beast, but there are two marks. You're either sealed with the Holy Spirit. You're either one of the 144,000, which again, I think cannot be understood literally as just 144,000, but as I think again, one of these things that refer to a multitude, but a distinct multitude, not a large multitude, but not a multitude, it just is everybody. And again, I think the 144,000 is indicative of, it can be divided by 12, and stands again for the 12 apostles and the 12 tribes of Israel. Again, these numbers, I think, are all symbolic for God's people, for the redeemed. Okay? They have his father's name written on their foreheads. Not the mark of the beast, but their father's name, his father's name written on their foreheads. And talks here about the four living creatures falling down and worshiping and praising God. You see a scene from heaven, and it's these 144,000 are described as the ones who follow the Lamb wherever he goes. Are you one of those 144,000? Are you willing to follow the Lamb wherever he goes? You either are, or you aren't. And if you aren't, then you're one of those who have the mark of the beast. Okay? They are redeemed among men, being first fruits to God, and their mouth was found no deceit, and they are without fault before the throne. Okay? Because their vestures have been washed in the blood of the Lamb. He said, I saw another angel going forth, preaching the everlasting gospel to all who dwell on the earth. And I think this ties in with the idea that the gospel has gone out. God speaks to the hearts of every person. Every person is blameworthy if they have not received the gospel. There's no one that can stand and say, I did not know, because there's a light that lightens every man. And no one here would be blameworthy, because they had even more than that. All right. Now I want you to go farther on down. Babylon is fallen, is fallen, is fallen. It's coming to an end. The dragon, the beast, the false prophet are being defeated. Their empire is coming to an end. And the wrath of God is being poured out. And in verse 12 it says, here's the patience of the saints, those who keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus. Yes, says the Spirit, they that they may rest from their labors and their works follow him. And then I want us to move very quickly here to the last judgment. It says, I saw one like the Son of Man. And we know whenever that appears, one like the Son of Man, that's always a reference to Jesus. It's always a reference to Christ. Having on his head a golden crown, and he appears in his hand a sharp sickle, and he sat on a cloud. And we have an image here of Christ descending from heaven in the clouds, as Thessalonians tells us. And as Jesus told us in Acts when he would return, he has a sickle and he's come for the harvest of the Lord. And we know that Jesus talked about in the harvest, at the end of the harvest, what would happen. The tares, the wheat would be separated from the tares or from the weeds. And Jesus comes in with his sickle and he harvests it. And I think he's harvesting the wheat. And he's taking those sheaves, that sheave of wheat in his arms and taking us to himself. A second angel comes and he thrusts in his sickle, and it says the grapes, the vines and the grapes are fully ripe, and he takes them and he thrusts them into the winepress of the wrath of God. So I think we have a picture here of the final judgment, a judgment in which those whose names are written in the book of life, the wheat, are harvested by the Lord and carried in his arms like a sheaf. But those who have the mark of the beast, their time has fully come, the ripeness, they're fully ripe, and they are thrust into the winepress of God's wrath. Here is the patience of the saints. Here are those who keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus. And then I heard a voice from heaven saying to me, write, blessed are the dead who die in the Lord from now on. Any response to the message?